Our second scripture today is from Matthew, chapter 11. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word to his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to look at? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who wear soft robes are in royal palaces. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist. Yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than him."
Thanks, Justin. We didn't go on a lot of family vacations when I was a kid, but when we did, we typically flew on a plane. My mom worked for the airline, so it was often cheaper and easier for us just to fly wherever we wanted to go. But when I was about 10 years old, my dad, who was feeling a little nostalgic about his own childhood experience of being packed in a station wagon with his siblings, packed up his own family to give us a taste of what a good old-fashioned family road trip was like. I remember being utterly disgusted at the idea of sitting next to my little sisters in a car for 2 days straight to get to Florida, when I knew it would only take us 2 hours if we were to fly there, if we wanted to. Why was he making me endure so much torture, I thought to myself. Plus, there were no sodas on this trip, no little bag of pretzels, no chairs that would swing back and a tray table that would come down. No sky-high view from above, just the never-ending, boring highway ahead of us, and my sisters crossing that imaginary line on either side of me for 2 days straight. And I wasn't going to let my dad forget the wrong of his ways for putting me in this position, and so about an hour into our trip, I asked him that one question that torments every parent with kids in the car. "Are we there yet?" And with a smug grin on my face, I asked that question every half hour until my dad had had enough, and he pulled the car over and told me he did not want to hear that question come from my mouth again. So I complied with his request, but I was also a pretty clever child too. He didn't say he said he didn't want to hear that question come from my mouth again. So I became resourceful and creative to get my point across. I grabbed a page from my sister's coloring book, swiped a crayon from the other, and wrote, "Are we there yet?" but backwards, so I could hold it up when he looked back in that rearview mirror. So he would have to read it in the rearview mirror for as long as I could hold it up, sure that he had made the wrong mistake of this road trip. "Are we there yet, Dad?" he would have to read all along the way. So it is on this fourth Sunday of Advent, this three-fourths along that we are on this road trip to Bethlehem, that we come eager maybe to ask this same question, "Are we there yet?" Like any long journey, we are looking forward to making it to our final destination. We are looking forward to the arrival of Jesus with joy and celebration that day brings. Yet as we light these Advent candles of hope, of peace, of joy, and finally today's candle of love, we find that the distance of the Advent path is ever more illuminated in front of us. While we arrive at Christmas in just 2 short days, we see that in many ways that we still have a long journey ahead of us. We are still very much a scattered and fractured people wandering in that wilderness. But not the wilderness that Isaiah describes, this lush and vibrant and blooming wilderness, but the wilderness found in the Gospel of Matthew that we read from this morning too. There seems to be a stark contrast between the picture that the prophet Isaiah paints and the one in our gospel text. While Isaiah paints a picture of a world where everything is perfect and the people of God live in safety and security, in our gospel we see that John the Baptist is locked in prison, a dark and dreary place where the sum of his fears lurk just around the corner. While Isaiah talks of creation gathering together to bring life even in the desert places, Matthew tells a story of isolation, fear, and doubt. While Isaiah paints a picture of a hopeful destiny of all people, Matthew paints a pretty accurate picture of our life here and now. If the words of Isaiah are a prophetic vision, then the cry of John the Baptist could be our collective lament. Joy is not evident here behind the bars that hold this prophet John captive, is it? Imprisoned for speaking the hard truth to Herod, John is in chains and in crisis, wondering if he has staked his life on the wrong promise and the wrong person. The Messiah, as far as John can tell, has changed nothing about this life. He was supposed to make this world new. He was supposed to bring justice, fairness, and order to human institutions, such that a tyrant like Herod would no longer sit on the throne, and a righteous man like John would no longer be imprisoned. Jesus was supposed to finish the costly work John started so boldly in the wilderness. He was supposed to renew the world. So it is in this same fractured, broken, and desolate world that, like John, we look around and wonder, where are the tidings of comfort and joy that we sing about? Where did that Jesus go that we welcomed in our midst last Christmas Eve when we lifted our candles high and sang joy to the world? Like John, we too might be asking if this Jesus is the Emmanuel who is to come, or are we to keep waiting for another? We truly are still a wilderness people. We all bear the marks of living in it and wandering through it, even though to each other at first glance, we might look like we've got it all together. While I risk sounding like a Scrooge, I know this Christmas time can be its own desert time for so many. It represents a stark contrast between the well-marketed joy we are literally sold in department stores and the painful reality in which we find ourselves to have journeyed over this past year. With a political climate that has left us feeling so torn apart, so distant from each other, and so broken, the arrival of Christmas joy can either be a welcome reprieve or maybe even seem misplaced. It can also serve as somewhat of a distraction from the real pain and suffering we have encountered at the hands of each other. We can become seduced by the need to buy or earn gifts to make us happy. We can allow our sentimentality to take over, thus easily forgetting that we are a people who are not yet healed, not yet reconciled. We are definitely not there yet. We forget that after the tree has been put on the front lawn and the lights have been taken down, we will no longer be able to ignore our tender wounds. Our seasonal joy suspends our belief that there are still tyrants like Herod, refugees that sojourn across dangerous lands to find a Bethlehem home, and no room in the inn for our humanity to find a place to lay its head. As we sang of Christ's birth into our world last Christmas, I'm not sure we knew what that world would look like 363 days later. So then how do we find each other in the midst of this wilderness place? Is this vision of Isaiah even a possibility, or is it simply a mirage we will never fully grasp? What will we offer each other to help quench our thirst and together enable our lives to blossom with this joy? The town of Augusta, Georgia is not a desert climate by any means. In fact, it is a place of deep, rich soil and thick southern jungle-like vegetation. But for one man, it has become a dry and desolate place. It has become somewhat of a prison for him as well. 82-year-old Dan Peterson said that after his wife Mary had died, who he had been married to for over 60 years, he found himself in a dark wilderness of depression. He spent days just staring outside of his window, watching the world pass him by, unable to fully figure out what he was living for, other than just waiting to die like she did. And he did that for about 6 months until one day he decided that he had to go to the grocery store, which he truly hated doing. Anyone who saw him walking through the aisles would have thought he was the town grump by the expression on his face, by the ways those 6 months of grief had buried any signs of life within him. But it was senior day at the grocery store that day, and he knew that there might be some deals out there to be had on deli meat or cans of soda. And while he wanted to find a good deal, he wanted just as badly not to be seen. He didn't want to be noticed. But as he was nearing the end of the canned vegetable aisle, that's when this unapproachable man was approached by a 4-year-old girl named Nora. The news report that I saw this on, the story that was reported on, showed the security footage from the grocery store. And you can see all this happening as both Nora and Dan round the corner and pass by each other. Nora reaches out for Dan from the seat in the cart as soon as she sees him, and he stops. And she says to him, "Hi, old person, it's my birthday today."
Yeah.
"Well, happy birthday," Dan grumbled back. "Can I have a hug?" she asked. Dan and Nora's mother were both shocked at the audacity of this very new 4-year-old. "A hug?" he kind of shouted back. She smiled in response. "Yes, it's my birthday, and I would like a hug from you." And she also responded by reaching her arms around his neck, and Dan wrapped his arm around her as if his life depended on it. And he said, "Well, absolutely." And her mother snapped this photo of their meeting as Nora requested this picture, which is up in the top left corner. And he said to her, after this was all over, "You don't know this, but this is the first time in quite a while that I've felt this much joy." And clearly, this was not the end of their connection together. Dan and Nora still visit each other at least once a week, and every time it's like the grocery store all over again. Hugs and joy and sharing of each other's stories. Nora shares what excites a 4-year-old about life, which is books and adventures and make-believe. And Dan tells her about his late wife, Mary, and how much she would have loved to have met Nora. When the news reporter asks Dan what he believes his life holds for him now that he's met this 4-year-old named Nora, Dan replies, "She opened me up to a love I did not know existed for me, and I have been able to make room in my heart for a lot more." Friends, this is the joy of Advent, where both vulnerability and persistence meet to pave a holy way. And while it might seem like a stretch for a 4-year-old in Augusta, Georgia to give us an example of that, we would also be wise to remember that it was a baby in Bethlehem that brought us to that place 2,000 years ago. The joy of Advent goes far beyond the glitz and glitter of the season and is a challenge to us as we welcome in the presence of God's love made every day. So maybe John the Baptist understood something hard and flinty about joy while in that prison cell. Because joy in a prison cell isn't about sentimentality or happiness or the pious suppression of our own most painful crises and questions. Joy is about searching for each other in the midst of it all, for reaching out to each other, being vulnerable with each other in the reality of our brokenness, and persistently reaching out to be present with each other. When the disciples tell Jesus how John is doing, Jesus responds by sending them back to him, saying, "Go and tell John what they hear and see." In other words, Jesus says, "Go back to John and tell him your story. Tell him my story." And in those stories of both joy and pain, new life will bloom. This is both the reality and challenge of joy that Jesus comes among us to live out, which Our Advent journey extends beyond just this season. This is the call upon our lives. While Advent is a time of waiting and longing of a world in which God desires, both Jesus and Isaiah convince us that we must be actively pursuing it in each other. We must, as the prophet Isaiah says in the Message translation of our reading today, we must energize our limp hands, strengthen our rubbery knees, tell all fearful souls, even our own, courage, take heart. God is here, right here, on the way to put things right. This season is a time of longing and a time to reaffirm with our community that there is no wilderness too wild for God to restore. No person or situation so dead that God cannot find life. No prison door or chains of oppression that cannot be broken. We will know the joy of this truth because we have followed God to the wilderness to find out. We have not run from it, but deeper into it to meet each other within it, with that vulnerability and persistence. It is there that we will find the desert that blooms between us. We will be the signs of life, signs of God's presence, signs of God's joy. May it be so. Amen.